Hello and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 284. In this episode, we're covering Sense8 202, Who Am I? Before we get into our episode, we want to tell you how you can get a hold of us. Our contact info is email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And our Tumblr is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Mitch, and before we start our episode today, we're going to help you differentiate between the newbies and the superfans by doing our fun facts. And I'm going to start with you today, Mai. You are my other superfan on the podcast. What is your fun fact?
My fun fact is that, A, I'm still sick, so congratulations, you get the sexy voice, and B, hockey is back.
See, I didn't know hockey ever went away.
It does feel like a year-round sport sometimes.
It only did because we happened to win the Stanley Cup, but
yeah. I was gonna say, actually, when I first started talking to you, that your voice sounded clearer. Isn't that weird that you sounded sick and it sounded clearer to me? But sexy voice, all things considered, is great sounding, so thank you for
thank
that
you, thank you.
All right, and then Kristen, you're our first newbie on this podcast. What is your fun fact?
And I'm an actual newbie now. Yay!
Yeah, for season 2. It's great.
Yeah. My fun fact is that it's been a long time since I've been on, and my Lions beat the pants off of Brittany's Patriots, and that doesn't ever happen. And it was shocking, and I only saw half of it because I had stuff going on. And my brother texted me, and I was in, like, denial. I was like, wait, what? Like, my brothers love to make fun of me and, like lie to me and tell me things and then be like, just kidding. Like they're pains in my butt. But so I really thought that's what they were doing. And they're like, no, we won. Check the score. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And I was hoping. And I was like, I need to like, I didn't want to poke fun at Brittany because the Lions are not great, but we just had a really good game. And so I was like, I don't want to like say anything because we won one game. The only game we've won is versus the Patriots. We've lost everything else. So I'm like, I don't know how we managed it, but it was great. So yeah, it was good fun. That's about all I got.
It was nice to me after the Patriots, after 28-3. So let's be nice to Brittany.
Right, exactly. That's why I did not say anything because I thought about going on Twitter and being like, so Brittany. But I was like, no, I'm going to be nice because the Lions lose all the time. I know how this feels.
If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything
exactly,
at all.
Exactly. But I was really excited about it. It was a fun, fun game.
Well, good. Yeah, I hear the Patriots are a good team. So that's the only thing I know out of that. But I'm happy. You're happy for your Bears or Lions. Lions and Tigers and Bears. Oh, my. Caitlin, what's your fun fact? Our second newbie.
The Braves are in the playoffs, and I don't want to talk about it. It's not going well. Though, to be fair, they are a year ahead of schedule. They were supposed to be really bad this year, and then they won 90 games, which is a lot of games to win when you're supposed to win, like, 75. So by the time this episode comes out, they'll probably be eliminated. But that's okay, because they made the playoffs a year early, and I'm just trying to hold on to that and deal with it because it hasn't been pretty otherwise.
Yikes. Well, I mean, it was really cool too when you were talking about how they got into the playoffs when you thought they were supposed to be bad. I mean, I don't get how that conceptually works, but it sounds so awesome. And I'm so happy for you that at least happened this year. And then my fun fact is that I like watching Netflix shows with, I'm not sure its official name, but I think it's like English descriptive for the hard of seeing. And it's not because I am hard of seeing. I am without my glasses. I think many people are, but not blind. But it's meant for people who are like legally blind, I think. And they do a really good job of describing scenes as they're happening. And sometimes for me, it helps because shows like Sense8 are so busy. And it's hard to understand everything as it's going on because there are flashes of characters jumping around. So sometimes having someone describe it to you while you're reading the subtitles can like work. I've done it for a couple other shows. Usually Netflix does it for just their originals, which is like half of their content by now. But I've done it for like Orange is the New Black and other shows like that. And it's really cool. I suggest it because it's almost like you're reading an audiobook while watching it. It's fun. I really love it. And they do a lot of like descriptors of like characters and their names happen before they're like said on the show. They'll describe them because it's easier to describe their name as opposed to just what they look like when they're going to be reoccurring. Like I think they even gave Whispers' wife a name in this episode. I forget it, but they gave her name an episode, but Will wakes up and he's like, I didn't catch your name. And I was like, I did. So it's almost like you're being let in on a secret, even more so than subtitles. Sometimes subtitles do the same. Sometimes they'll give you a name before you get it. So it's fun. If you want to get just like that little bit more of detail, even in your favorite shows, it might even be worth watching back on them with this English descriptive audio. I think it's pretty fun. So if anybody else is of that interest, I know it's pretty particular, but you might like it. So now that we're all done with our fun facts for this episode, I wrote the doc, so in the self-serving nature that this job is, I'll read my own show synopsis. Here we go. In this episode, you are a sensate with 99 problems, but a milt ain't one. As Whispers is compromised, Leto and Kaff give moving speeches, Nomi is sleuthing in Chicago, Wolfgang is inheriting clubs, and Riley is playing the role of secret agent man. All right, everybody, let's jump into the character with always the most going on, it seems, Will. Will is in a nightmare sequence where he's seeing a couple of different things going on. First thing of note is that he's seeing Angelica kiss Whispers in the flashback as she's giving him more warnings. Be careful of him. This is dangerous. And then my question here is, I'm going to start with you, Mai, as a super fan. When you first saw this, did you think that she was evil? Was she trying to get to him by pretending to be evil? Did she not know he was evil? What did you first think when you saw this kiss happen? I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it still, and I've seen it. So.
Yeah, I still don't know how to feel about it.
Right?
except it feels weird. It feels bad. Yeah. I don't understand how she wouldn't know that he wasn't great, if you know what I mean.
Right. And I know we keep talking about points of like the show got canceled, so it didn't have time to explore all it wanted to. This episode focuses on Sarah Petrell again. And that's something we've talked about as super fans. Like, that's just something that we don't understand sometimes as we're watching it. Like, as the given episodes are, we're confused too. So maybe that's going to be part of what we're into, that we get a little bit lost when Angelica comes on screen. I've always felt a little bit lost when she comes on screen. Caitlin, do you feel any particular way about Angelica by this point?
Other than having no concept of who she is or what she's doing, that's my only thought about her.
Like, right, she's shrouded in this mystery and never really given that context as far as we're up to, so I get where you're coming from.
And I guess I don't feel like it's in a mystery way, it's just in a, like, we're not gonna tell you way.
Yeah, I know. And then it goes,
so they try and, so when they try and associate like emotional connection to her, I'm like, I have none of this emotional connection you're trying to make me have, because you don't tell me anything about her.
Yes. Almost like Jonas too. They're pretty similar in that, right? Especially that they're like hanging out at log cabins together now, and I'm like, why?
Freaking Jonas.
Plus, yeah. She's the main part of the weirdest thing about the Sensei, which is the lingering non-ghost thing, is the hardest part for me to believe in.
Yeah, because she's shown as this angelic figure all the time, like she's so good, but I'm like, what are you doing? I don't really know.
Yeah, you're sense. Also dead, so why are you popping up all the time?
Yeah, same with Sarah Petrell. Like, how is she popping up all the time? Is she a memory, is what Will was saying in this episode? I don't know. It's all very weird.
At one point, they said something about, like, the people that Whispers made eye contact with, like, their echoes or something are still in his mind. So every time she shows up, I sort of assume that we're somehow in Whispers' mind, and that's, like, what's left of her is trapped there.
That's a good observation, Caitlin. Kristen, how did you feel about this flashback with the whole sensate being controlled and then slicing another man's neck?
Well, it's just basically confirmation, since we saw the other zombie dude in season one with the mirror in the hallway. The guy, I forget what his name was.
Lobotomized dude.
Yeah, yeah, lobotomized dude.
Yeah. So this was just kind of confirmation that, yeah, this is a thing. Whispers can officially, like, take over their brains and use them as little zombie people, which is awesome. / not at all. I assumed, watching that whole flashback with Angelica, I assumed that she didn't realize what he was doing. Like, I assumed that she thought he was doing research to help Sensates or something, and that he had like, gaslighted her to have her believe that he was trying to help them, and then turned on her at the last possible moment, and, you know, and that's how she ended up being hunted by him and, you know, death and all of that nonsense. So I assumed that she didn't know what his true aim was, and that she thought she was helping him, trying to help them, was what I always just assumed.
Yeah, and then we get into all this Sicilium and birthing stuff that's also not really fully described. Sicilium more of, but not the birthing yet. We don't really know how Angelica got into that and how she's like, I don't understand from what they've described so far how they expect you to know what the significance of Angelica is emotionally, from the fact that we don't really know how she chose or didn't choose to give the birth of all of our sensates, but they just say, oh, you're just like your mother. Like, it's supposed to, like, hit us. But it's like, well, we don't really know much about her, really. So how are you expecting us to really care that he's much like his mother, looking at all these things like she is? And I don't know. Yeah, I get where you're coming from, Caitlin, in that point, that her emotional context is not there as much as her physical context. We don't get her. And that's a shame, because I think they could do a lot by this point of showing who in the hell this angelic nightgown-wearing figure is by now, but they're still just, like, only giving us flashes, very strange ones, her kissing Jonas, her kissing Whispers, and it's like, just give us a timeline. Like, show us what's going on with her as it's happening. Maybe that would help.
And they also have, like, Will, like, getting emotional because he saw her, and I'm like, why? Why? Because you have given us no reason to make that connection. So it's just, totally. It's like they're trying to force a connection that they have not fully created.
Right, because we see even our sensates, when they first meet each other, don't have that emotional connection all the way. They hear each other's thoughts and emotions, but as a human being of sorts, they need to have interactions, much like any of us, to get emotional contexts toward each other. But they get that with Angelica without too much interaction. Maybe it's like, oh, you birthed us, now we're cool. I don't know. It's it's a bit of a stretch in terms of plotting, even as Felix states. I mean, Felix can call out plotting issues, but it's not like the writers are always going to follow them. While he didn't get shot again, it's still past Angelica stuff, though. We do have Will observing Whispers's wife while they're kind of chit-chatting. It seems like in a memory, or could be present, neither here nor there. It seems like Whispers knows that he's doing it, and Jonas is like, he might be doing this on purpose, or he might have slept up. You don't know. We had a little bit of that conversation, too, with if Whispers was going to be with his family on Christmas, but he ended up being with Will's dad, and you were like, oh, we're going to be safe today. It's he's not gonna want to chase you today. He's with his family. But here he lets you see his family. So that was a bit interesting that he's just assumingly letting Will see his memory here or his action. Mai, did you get a sense if this was a current action or a memory? Or
felt current, I think.
Maybe from the blockers starting to work, I think it has to be current.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we figure out that Whispers is in London because of the plug and because of the boots and because of the, I don't know, accent, I'm sure. Other things, the way he's dressed, big city in London, in England, must be London. So we see Will do that math. That's pretty cool that he's getting into more investigative stuff. I've always liked his powers of observation. Kristen, I think you kind of like that genre of thing. So was this cool for you?
Yeah, it's hard to watch Will be this drug-induced haze, like seeing him in that state all the time because he's trying to keep everybody safe. It's very on character for him, but like, it's really hard to watch him like that. So I was really excited when, you know, like he finally got to show Whispers what he's figured out and like show him that he's on to him. And by the end of the episode, you know, he really kind of comes back into his own. So I really enjoy watching Will like get to use all of the skills he has as a cop, even if he can't be a cop in Chicago right now. Like, he has to be somewhere else. It's really nice to see him, like, be able to kind of stick it to Whispers after all the crap he's put him through.
Yeah, it's nice to finally see him stick it to the man as is. And it's there's a bit of a back and forth in this episode going with Whispers and Will about who's chasing who and what's what. Whispers does say when the discovery is happening on Will's part, you think that this is about you or where you are, you're wrong, this is war. But after that, we had the whole sequence where Will's just like, apparently Whispers slipped up here, I guess, without taking the blockers in time. The whole Sense8 crew gets in on a meeting that's happening with, I guess, the actual BPO, what they're like publicly known as, I think was the concept there. With a meeting with Whispers' boss. We're giving his real name. If anybody remembers it, please feel free to shout it out at me. But to whatever significance that is, I've only ever known him as Whispers when I talk about him. So that's why I think they even might call him Whispers or Milton later Gibbons? On.
Hmm? You're talking about Whispers?
Yeah. What's his full real name? Do you remember or do you know?
Milton Bailey Brandt.
Yeah, there you go.
But the guy he's having a meeting with calls him Gibbons.
So Gibbons, I'm thinking, must be his actual name. And Milton must be his stage name, as Whispers is his pet name. He has a lot of names. And he had a doctor name at one point. It was just all stupid. I mean, I'm just going to call him Whispers for all intents and purposes. The significance is that we learned his real name there.
Seemingly. Dr. Matheson.
Yeah, Dr. Matheson. It's like, come on, just give us one. Whispers is trying to run away, and all the Sense8s are kind of crowding in on him, figuring out the details. Nomi's looking up things. Will points to it, says that's him. They've caught him. He has children. They're going to try and get him, I guess. This is their win, and he's legitimately scared. After Will pretended like he was caught with the seagulls in this episode and the yogurt and the Icelandic medication labels, Will won. He was pretending, or Riley was, whichever way. Maybe she didn't let know Will where they are. Might have helped to do that. Good on Riley if she did. But Whispers wasn't that smart. He didn't take his blocker on time, and we won. We got him. So I guess we need to actually get him, find him. And I suppose if Will can look in his head, maybe he just needs to wait for another turn of blockers to go away. I don't know. Maybe he'll find a way. We'll see. I'm assuming Whispers is going to be in trouble from this point in the story. Caitlin, how are you feeling about what's going on with the story at this point? This was a pretty big moment.
That's a vague question. It's a good scene, I guess. But like I said last week, like, I'm kind of sick of Whispers, so I'm ready for this to move. And I was so frustrated that it took until the last like minute of the episode, and then it ended right as it got good. Just like, this needs to keep moving. And finally started moving, and then the episode ended, of course.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to argue you there. Netflix shows do tend to have that sort of pace going on. Kristen, how did you feel about the reveal of this, and like, where do you think it's going to go next after we know who he is?
I mean, this is the first time that they've kind of had one up. They've been playing from behind for so long and just trying to play catch up, because they're all new to this and Whispers has been at it forever, that it's nice to see them now have one up on him and him be a little scared. He's always kind of been able to keep his cool and not lose his cool. But here it was kind of wonderful to see him panicked, because they really got something on him this time. So yeah, no, I'm excited to see what comes of this and if they can kind of, I don't know if they're going to kill Whispers or if they're going to just like, make him useless or like take away his power or something, because, now that they know who he is and who he works for and the mystery surrounding him is gone, they'll have an easier time of, tracking them and tracking the movement of the people that work for him. And it'll be easier for them to find out where they're safe and where they're not. And I think that could go a long way to kind of just making Whispers like not as huge a threat as he used to be.
My prediction, it just occurred to me, maybe Will or Jonas or someone, is going to take control of Whispers the way he's been taking control of other Sense8s.
Ooh, boom. Nailed it.
Are you saying through lobotomy or just from other means?
I mean, now that Will has sort of played the game and somehow, like, you know, got one up, I assume, that's my prediction. I know we only have this one season, but is that through some means, like, Will will take it, or Jonas or someone he has previously terrorized will, you know, flip the script essentially. And since they're making such an effort to tell us about his powers of controlling other people, it seems like poetic justice that that would happen to him.
And it does seem like it would be, you know, a little bit more poetic if it was Jonas. After everything right. that's gone on with Angelica, like, I could see one of our sensates doing it, like Nomi or somebody. That makes total sense. But I also think it would be really interesting if Jonas, you know, was the one to kind of pull the puppet strings.
Well, yeah, and we still don't know where Jonas lies, because he's always going back and forth about if we feel he's good or bad from the context we're getting. And Will's still asking that question, or he's being asked that question in our season finale. And then Will's like, yeah, he's cool. He's good now. But he flips that pretty quick. And they keep going back still. They're like, I don't know if you can trust him. Like, there's little moments that the show gives you. They're like maybe his alliance with Angelica. Now she's kissing Whispers. So you're like, am I supposed to trust him? Is he our friend here? He's our in. He teaches us the story and gives us the Sicilian background stuff that we need to know. But we don't really know how to feel about him here. So that's another thing to note. And another is that I don't get why Whispers didn't just take a blocker. He runs away because he's scared and he's panicking. Take a blocker on the way out. I don't know if he did and we didn't see it, but I was trying to pay attention. I didn't see that going on.
It's already too late, though.
Yeah. I mean, once it takes a couple of minutes for the blocker to kick in anyway, and they already had more information than he wanted them to. Yeah. So I think he was taking one as he left. As he was saying, I'm compromised. Like, he still had his pills in his hand. I would imagine he was taking one. But by then, the truth had already been spilled, so.
Oh, okay.
Question for the newbies. Did it seem like his boss knew what he meant by saying that he was compromised?
No. I mean, for me, it seemed like boss dude knew, like, he knows that Whispers is running around and creating problems in Iceland, where he thought Will and Riley were hiding. Like, he knows that Whispers is out and about and hunting things, but it didn't seem like he really understood what Whispers was going on about once he started talking about being compromised, and, like, he didn't react at all to the pills being spilled, and he didn't see the panic in Whispers' eyes and, like, take it seriously. Because I feel like if his boss would have understood what might have been going on in that moment, he would have looked as worried as Whispers did.
So you're proposing, Kristen, that the boss does not know of the sensate capabilities.
Well, I think Whispers is doing
another job, or are you thinking he just didn't understand in that moment what he meant by compromised?
Well, I think he's kind of a typical CEO in that he doesn't know exactly what's going on in his company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knows what they do. He knows what the company does. And I'm sure he has a grand overview, but he doesn't understand the finer points of it because he doesn't care, as long as it, you know, makes him money or gets him power or whatever. And so I assumed, because he just didn't have the urgency that Whispers did in that moment, I assumed he didn't understand it or didn't know about it or something.
Yeah, and he kind of gives him almost like one of those, if you walk out this door moments, because he was like, I'm sick of your emergencies, which definitely gives us that context that he doesn't know and he does not care how the sauce gets made. He just wants the soup. And he may lose his soup because he's compromised. So that's bad for Whispers, perhaps, but not for our sensates. They seem pretty confident. They seem pretty cool. And I should note that it seemed like it kind of came together, yeah, in the finale of season one, but especially in Happy Fucking New Year, and then here, we really see them coming together as a group. There's eight of them doing this, and that is cool, because for me as a super fan, watching season one, seeing them introduced to each other so slowly, not using each other when they could have, like not having the connection to scream Kala and wake her up, because now we can. That's great that they're always there for each other no matter the time of day. And that's that. It's good to feel like we're at this point now, because it feels like the plot doesn't need to hold back, because now all eight of us have discovered Whispers. We all know who he is. We know his threat. So now let's do something about it, as opposed to the very arduous setup of season one. That was a lot to go through again, because I couldn't binge it. That's the thing. This show is very much built for binging. It's very much trying to get you to play the next episode immediately to see the exact after effects of this scene. So sorry to everybody that we're doing it as a one-week basis. That's just the nature of the podcast. But if you really needed to keep going, we understand. It was a pretty big cliffhangery kind of thing. All right, so then Riley, quickly then, she's importing this yogurt and her Icelandic meds, assumably through her father, if I understand the plot properly. He's singing a cute little song and waiting for her. He tells her that he trusts her. He wants her to come see a show he's about to play. I'm not sure if in Amsterdam or somewhere else, because Amsterdam is where Will and Riley are.
He was going to Vienna.
Is Vienna. Okay, so he just has his layover in Amsterdam. Yeah, so he's cute and fun and is very trusting of his daughter, which is so nice. And they kind of just share some weed and enjoy Amsterdam. So that was just a cute little scene. Does anybody like the father a lot here?
Yes.
Why so? Is he just precious to you too?
Yeah, he's just cute.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
Every time he's on screen, I'm still terrified he's going to get killed.
Because he's too nice.
He's too adorable, and he's not a main character, so he's not safe in that way. So I'm like, cute adult parents like that, get killed in shows. So I'm just like, every time he's on screen, I'm like, don't kill him this time, don't kill him!
He's like Bambi's mom.
What?
Is he like Bambi's mom?
Bambi's mom, yeah, he is. He is in the context that you're describing, that's sad. Rip Bambi's mom. I think we found our episode title by accident. Thank you, Mike. All right, so the Nomi has some more action here too. She does a lot of learning in this episode, so not the most interesting stuff to talk about, because a lot of it's just lectury stuff, whatever. I don't know that I personally learned much when she was in the museum. Kind of just felt like more, I don't know how else to say it, but just like psychobabble, is that the right word? Just kind of like something we're not really meant to get, but it's meant to sound really intelligent. But they kept all of it in. They didn't really cut any of these lectures or anything. They made it so that we're sitting through a couple of minutes of conversation that it's going mostly over our heads.
I mean, I thought it was understandable in the sense that they're giving us the background of who the sensates are, on an evolutionary level. And they're talking about literally them as an offshoot of Homo sapiens, and they're literally a different species, and the human species has, since they started evolving on a different track, has been trying to wipe them out. So it seems like they're putting the context for whatever Whispers is doing into this broad evolutionary context of what's been going on. So when he says you have no idea what you're doing, this is war, I think this is meant to be the context of this goes far beyond Whispers, this goes far beyond BPO, this is a evolutionary fight for supremacy, I guess.
I also loved them kind of talking about how before humans had speech, they may have communicated this way, because it makes a lot of sense that the psychic connection would have happened before languages were built or any of that. So I think it's really cool to think that the sensates would have existed before Homo sapiens, and that humans were an evolution of that. Once they learned how to vocalize and had language to communicate, they didn't need the psychic connection, which is why they're so rare. I think that is all very cool too.
I like how he pointed out that language was important because you can't lie when it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have a psychic link, you can't lie.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool too.
Well, I'm happy everyone else found this interesting. When I'm doing a show for Rewatchable, yes, I question the science. So you think I would have loved this, but I only care about the plotting. I only care about how it advances. This kind of background wasn't interesting to me. It should have been. It really should have been. But I was only what does Nomi get out of this? What's she trying to do? And she's trying to find Whispers. That's the end goal at the end. I don't know why she really felt the need to be at the museum, maybe just to find out more, because the Wachowskis, they wanted to give us the context. So fair enough, we have it. It's there. We wiped out every other human because we're Homo sapiens, and that's what we do. Something else that we learned, I guess. So that is part of what Nomi's doing. A little bit before that, she's with Bug trying to crack the BPO code. They're still at Bug's house, it seems. And they just go to Chicago very quickly. Once again, who knows where they're getting this money? They just seem to have money to buy new laptops for Sun to smash or last-minute plane tickets to places. Must be
hacking.
Nice. Yeah, hacking. Maybe they're just stealing. Maybe she's literally just stealing. She's Robin Hooding it for herself. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that super-powered kid from Heroes who could, like, hack technology and was stealing money from ATMs. That's what Nomi feels like to me, if that's true. Yeah, so we are seeing Bug trying to crack BPO's code, and he says, they might even be more paranoid with me. I put that in there because I thought that was just a really cute line. I like Bug. Mai, do you like our Bug friend?
Yes, I do. And I like that he's on our team.
As being one of the smartest minds to crack code in the world, as Nomi put it. I thought she was talking about herself when she first said that. And I was like,
yeah, so did I.
Yeah. I was like, be humble. And then she was saying about her friend, and I was like, oh, that's cute.
They like him.
They really do.
As friends.
I didn't mean to make the quote, they like him, they really like him, but there it is. So yeah, in Chicago, Nomi is talking to this professor with Amanita there as well. They're both kind of investigating, and Amanita pulls out a photo of Whispers. Well, the professor and Whispers are both younger, sometime in the 80s, we hear. Professor says he doesn't know how to get a hold of him, just leaves his door unlocked, lets them have at it, walks out. They walk out too. That was a weird bit of staging. I don't think that was realistic. A professor would have locked you, like would have left with you and then locked the door. Doesn't that sound logical, Caitlin? Like, is this weird?
I mean, no school that I've ever worked at has offices like that. Yeah. So must be nice.
It certainly looks very fancy, I'll give you that much. The University of Chicago, as the English descriptive words told me. So thank you for that. That's another thing. They describe settings really well. So I think it's going to help me get little bits like that down. But yeah, so as unrealistic as that office may have been for or locking it or having it, as Caitlin puts it, we do then go on to have Nomi visit Sarah's mom, as did Jonas, as did Angelica, as did Whispers, as did baby Will. They're petting baby Sarah. They're bringing Sarah on special school trips for being Whispers. Angelica is helping in the garden. There's a lot going on with Sarah, but Nomi's translating messages for Sarah's mom right here. She's telling Will's telling Nomi the things that he wants to say. Like, I will always seek justice for Sarah. I'm going to figure out what happened. There's a moment where we hear Whispers killed Sarah. And I'm not sure if that's revealed or just given specifically context. I think we kind of understood that from the lobotomization flashback that we saw. That was pretty gross in season one. But yeah, so we hear about the husband. He's probably divorced or dead, but he's not around anymore. And he didn't like it, but she's so cool with it. Kristen, did you find it weird that she was just like, yeah, people visit me and talk about my dead daughter all the time?
I mean, I don't think it's weird, because when you lose a child like that, I'm sure it's really, like, it's got to be incredibly difficult to wake up every day and think how old your child would be that day and what they'd be doing. And, you know, like, I'm sure it's really hard to move on from losing a child. So it's got to be incredibly, like, comforting to still learn things about your child from other people. So, like, having this group of people who saw things through Sarah's eyes and who knew Sarah in a way, and like being able to learn new things about her and to see, you know, new events through their eyes in her life or old events through their eyes. Like, it's gotta be kind of a comfort that there's still things that she can learn about her daughter and, you know, kind of hold that close to her heart. It might make it harder for her to move on, but like, it, you know, and sure, it's hard. I can't say I understand it, but I empathize that or yeah, empathize that she would be going through that. But I mean, it's gotta be at least like interesting to know that there are other people who see your daughter. Like, that whole concept must have been hard to wrap her head around at first, but once she did, like, I'm sure it brings her some sort of comfort and just peace, I guess.
And I guess we can kind of take like the Ghost Whisperer approach, the Jennifer Love Hewitt TV show, where like you're not going to believe them until they start saying things only the daughter would know, like really specific thoughts as opposed to like facts, I guess. That's probably what happened with either Angelica or Jonas. I think Jonas was visiting posthumously when she was posthumous, I guess is the way to say that, when Sarah was dead.
I think she probably didn't meet many of the sensates until after Sarah was dead. I'd imagine mm-hmm. she met Whispers before.
Mm-hmm. Because he was taking her away. Take my daughter. She's on school trips. That seems really weird.
I don't know about all that. But, I mean, it seemed like the rest of them came to her posthumously and was like, we knew your daughter. I don't know. That was kind of my impression. I might have been wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so too, except for Whispers, right? And she's like, Whispers was great. He was awesome. Very nice man. And I was like, even when he's trying to pretend to be nice, he's still not nice. He's still sleazy. I don't know what she was thinking. The professor here, too, in this episode, he's like, oh, that old picture from the 80s, that was fun. Like, everybody else that doesn't know Whispers is evil seems to think he's just, like, a very cool guy. That he, like, even when he's talking to his wife, he seems very creepy to me. He doesn't seem like he's able to turn off the creep button no matter who he's around. So it's just, it's beyond me that they can find this man anything attractive, but have at it, people, if that's what they like, let alone taking the daughter away. I can't hammer that home enough. That's just so weird. Did that hit you as a very foreign concept, Mai, that everyone's just trusting Whispers outside and that they're letting him take away Sarah for these school trips?
Yep. That's everything's really weird about that to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to explain that.
And honestly, everything about the mom just, I know it's not supposed to be that weird within the concept of the show, but it still feels really strange.
Well, this is the same show that has, like, Amanita's mom is, like, totally cool with this. And, like, there are way too many people in the show who are just, like, chill with this, everything going on.
For real.
Yeah. Yeah,
Amanita herself, too, when she's just like, we can bring you to the hospital or we can run away. Let's run away. There are a lot of quick leaps here. And, yeah, we even see, like, Caphias in the last episode was nervous about letting Gila know a little bit, and Son's like, don't do it. Some people are just like, yeah, I'm hearing voices in my head. This is normal. And everybody's like, cool in their lives, especially Nomi. So it's like, what? I'm missing the connection as to why everybody could be so cool with this. But as long as they're cool with it, we'll just keep moving along in the plot. So maybe we'll see more of Sarah. Maybe we won't. As I said, many super fans are still even confused about this as it progresses per where we are. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Leto is convincing Hernando to go to their first movie premiere together. And once he does get him to go, which I loved, Leto is harassed during a red carpet interview, which I did not love. The journalist, the interviewer, is very rude to him and is just being very aggressive. As he says, she's going for the jugular very quickly. Very disturbing. Yeah, Kristen, were you pissed off here? Because I was.
See, yes, of course. I was pissed at the interviewer. Like, she was being a royal pain in the ass, and she wanted the easy story, but there's definitely a better story there, so I got a little annoyed that she didn't want to, like, you know, she wasn't on his side at all. There's no loyalty to Leto at all, and it made me mad, especially since they seemed to have a rapport. Like, when he walked up, he, like, said her name and was all, you know, welcoming, like, he had seen her on the red carpet a million times. So it made me a little mad. But mm-hmm. I love what the sequence gave us with all the different speeches, like, with when everybody kind of got involved. I loved all of that because it wasn't just Leto who was talking to a camera and who was, you know, there in that moment. Like, Caphias was there, and so was Nomi, and, like, people kept popping in to kind of help him through this, and it was just wonderful.
Yeah, Caitlin, did you find the joint speech between Caiaphas and Leto inspiring?
I honestly had a really hard time understanding it because they were jumping around so much. It was really hard for me to like hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I felt it was too jumpy. Like it was really hard for me to follow the sequence. I liked it in theory, but I wish it had been a little smoother.
Yeah. Well, it fits in two other scenes we've seen. One being in Happy Fucking New Year when Leto comes home, has the word faggot spray painted on his wall, and every other character keeps jumping in, seeing their words. And you almost want to pause it to see all of their words for their insecurities here. And then also, and once again, you almost need to rewatch the speech to understand it, and to see every character saying each little bit, like Nomi when she's topless and says, "How you see me?" That one I found pretty poignant, but it could have been lost in the mix. And then the other scene that this harkens back to is when Leto has a moment where I think he's thinking of Sun's interview for the prison, and he's giving those answers as opposed to his interview, and then he's able to come out with like a really slick speech. So we see his skills perhaps helping Caiaphas, because Caiaphas is sort of struggling here in his interview with Zakiya, I think her name was, and then he's able to pick it up once Leto starts getting into it. So it's nice to see more of Leto's skills come in, and whatever he needs to act. I think even there was a bit of acting elsewhere in this episode, perhaps with Sarah's mom, I'm not sure. But Leto does come in every once in a while to do this sort of stuff. So the whole room stops, much like when Leto gave that love speech in that one episode with the Sun connection. So both with Caiaphas and Leto, this is meant to be a pretty significant moment, because it's like, wow, we're amazing. We're on TV. Aren't we cool? So that was fun for them. And I am very happy that Leto, yeah, gave the one up on that red carpet interviewer. That was pretty nice. And then we have the movie scene when the three are seeing the movie, and Daniela kind of shrugs down when everybody starts laughing and leaving as Leto's character kisses the girl. But of note, Leto sits up taller. He seems proud. He seems happy. My, wasn't this cute?
No, it wasn't.
Leto's reaction, not the people's.
Yeah, Leto's reaction was cute, but I secondhand embarrassment from this whole scene when they laugh at him. It got to me, and was really hard to watch.
Well, also, I think we should note the significance of, in the end, we'll all be judged by the courage of our hearts, which was the name of that season one episode, and also has a new significance here, because not only is Leto now able to stand up for Daniela in that episode, as he needed to, I think, or maybe the episode after, now Leto is able to stand up for himself. He's able to sit tall and not get embarrassed for being a homosexual in any given context when people are being very abusive and very bad toward him, heckling him.
It feels so painful to listen to them laugh at him.
It is, yeah. It's rough. I can imagine being in his shoes. It sounds like a literal nightmare. Like, I think I've had nightmares like this.
And they changed the movie poster and...
Like, oh, did they change it?
Yeah, he's moved to the back.
Oh God, that's a good detail. Weird.
He stares at it for a minute.
I had so much else going on in my head, I might have just missed it. But
like, there's less fans there for him, and everything's so right. Like, just support this sweet man.
And then Caitlin, did you like that moment too when the actress is saying her lines, but then so is Hernando, because he knows that too. He's been practicing them with Leto.
I did not notice that part.
Yeah, it was just a cute little, almost throwaway thing, just for us to recognize their relationship, Leto's and Hernando's, once again, and how close they've been. And then moving on to Caiaphas. Caiaphas goes on a date with Zakiya, the journalist who was interviewing him, and they reflect on how two generations ago, their grandmothers would have felt about the freedom and opportunities that women have in today's culture in Nairobi, comparatively. And then Zakiya goes on to say, yeah, but we're still in a lot of issues, so I can't really think of my job as being major. It seems small compared to the things I could be doing when there are so many injustices and there are people acting cavalier toward violence and barbaric acts. I thought that this was a very poignant conversation. It didn't feel like many of the other philosophical conversations can feel in the show, as those do feel sometimes like filler. Some of Nomi's stuff to me felt like filler in this episode. But this didn't. This felt like it had more significance because we were meeting a new character, perhaps developing a new relationship. So Kristen, did you find this conversation as moving as me?
I like their conversation. I like that from the interview to where they're talking in the cafe, like you have this, you know, she kind of comes at him and is really combative with him at the beginning of this interview, thinking he's kind of just naive and, you know, he's not really seeing the world as it is. But then as he speaks and as he talks to her on camera, like she sees it, he seems to have a better grasp of things. Like, I love that she kind of comes to respect his outlook and the way he sees the world, and then comes to him the next day, you know, dressed as herself rather than her reporter persona, and, you know, just wants to get to know him, which I think is really cool. But yeah, no, their whole discussion is, it's very moving. I love their interaction, and I'm interested to see where it goes from here.
Now, Caitlin, did you ship Sun and Kafius from their Van Damme interactions? And if so, does that die here because of Zakiya's date with Kafius?
No, I have never shipped Kafius with anyone. Or Sun with anyone. And I'm not shipping this either. I was just like, oh, I guess they're going to give the new Kafius a girlfriend. Okay. I can't say I'm particularly invested, and it makes me so sad because I feel like I've lost my Kafius.
So yeah, how is everyone adjusting then to the understandable actor change that they've done?
Not great, Bob.
It's hard. It's really hard because the old Kafius is just so, he's so charming and sweet and wonderful and wholesome, and this guy does not give that to me.
There's a different type of energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting that same, the same energy.
Innocence?
Like, yeah, it's different. He's very different. And I'm trying to give him a chance. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I just keep, every time he, talks or says something, I, picture the other actor.
Yeah.
Like, how he would look in this scene saying this thing and how he would react. And it's sad, but, you know. It's how it works, right?
Yeah, and it was cute how they did it last week with Gila saying, your face looks different. I liked that. I like that they just straight up acknowledged it.
I mean, but I'm glad they didn't just blindly trudge forward. Like, of course we changed actors, and no, it doesn't change anything. Like, at least they acknowledged, yes, we had to change his face.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of shows where they didn't do that. They didn't acknowledge it, and they just tried to pretend that it was still a thing. Shameless is one of those. So many shows, I'm sure. Shameless changes Mandy from season one to season two. They do a good job of getting her energy and her looks down, personally. This show does not. It does not get the same look, feeling, energy, voice of our old Kafius. He doesn't speak with the same canter. He doesn't have the same tone. Nothing about him is similar to our old Kafius. I don't know if that's something on casting or if the Wachowskis were just like, we like him, we're picking him. It could have really just been that, if I understand their personalities. So he's a different guy. He is.
Yeah,
I like him. That's not against the actor, you know.
I'm not necessarily shipping him with this chick because we don't really know her, and, you know, whatever. She could be one of someone in disguise. Who knows? I'm not really, interested in them. I just love that he is going to get to know, someone else, because we only ever really see him interact with his friend, the, you know, rich guy, and then his mom. And, you know, almost everybody else we've seen in really weird situations and other places. Like, I'm interested to see how he, interacts with women and how that all goes. Like, I love Kafius, but I feel like there are parts of him that we don't know very well just because he hasn't had as much screen time and as much overlap with the other sensates as, you know, Nomi and all of the others have. So I'm interested to see how this interaction kind of works into everything else. I don't necessarily need him to have a girlfriend, just a friend is totally mm-hmm. awesome with me.
I agree with that. I like the idea of bringing in someone who brings a completely different perspective for him, because pretty much everyone he met in season one, like, his goodness affected them and their outlook changed because of him. And I'm intrigued by the possibility of this woman coming in and her more progressive views, like, affecting him and mm-hmm. Evolving in ways that he kind of did for other people in the first season. So I like the potential for him to branch out and hear some new perspectives and points of view.
Yeah, I like the point you guys are bringing up about him not needing to have a significant other to validate, I assume you're saying, and then also how his goodness, yeah, it's always lit up other people. It's always been very sweet. I don't think I'm alone, Mai, in saying that, yeah, there are shippers out there for Sun and Coffeeus for the slight smirk she gives him even in Happy Fucking New Year when he's like, she's a businesswoman, and she's like, hells yeah, I am. Could just be like a validation thing. Doesn't have to be a shipping thing. Like, yeah, you know I am. But also, it just felt like it to me with their conversation when they're in Seoul walking around in the water. They almost have a cute meet there, in my opinion. That's where I ship them. So it's talking, you know, just strictly season one stuff of shipping. Do you see where I'm talking about that, Mime?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lots of people vibe that. Mm-hmm. I don't personally, but, you know, I see it.
Well, put me in that court. I'm usually the shipper, too, so I'll be the shipper. I'm fine with that. I'll ship Sun and Coffeeus.
Oh, I'm so surprised.
Yeah. Listen, this is not Rat Amy. I have to find some other kind of ships. Gosh. All right. Wolfgang, speaking of another ship, Wolfgang is with Felix at the club. They're dancing. They're being cute. They're being boys. I love it all. Oh, my God. I love it. I love every one of these scenes. I never get sick of them. They're always so cute. And then Fuchs, I'm sorry, I'm American, I know. shows up and is like, hey, do you like this club? Felix is like, I can live in it. And Fuchs is like, cool, you do now. You own it. And it was just weird. It's like, he's the king of the north, I guess, of one of these territories, one of these kingdoms that we keep talking about with the ant. Mm. Can someone shed light on to what's going on exactly here? Like, is Fuchs trying to, like, woo Wolfgang into joining his side? Because he's now, like, a lead gangster, Wolfgang. Is that what's going on here?
He was talking to Felix about how the thing I appreciate about you is your loyalty. So I assume that he's trying to win over Felix, which in turn will win over Wolfgang.
Okay. Because win over, we're saying, yeah, is to get him on his side, to get this fighter on his side, right?
I mean, everyone seems to want Wolfgang on their side because he's murdering other gangsters left and right.
Right. And they know how adept he was at doing that. They don't know it's because of all the sensates probably helping him out. But much like, yeah, Coffeeus, they trust him and they want him as a protector. They trust him to do that protecting, even if they can't trust him because he's pretty backstabbing against his own family in a way. Yeah, he was taking revenge, but that was definitely his uncle. His aunt's pretty cool with it. The wife was like, I'm not going to come against you, but other people will. So yeah, we're seeing this kind of courting stuff going on with Wolfgang. And then was he at a giraffe exhibit or something? He's with his mom in his Tigers. Flashback.
Tiger.
Was it tigers? Yeah. Oh, because the cage conversation with Sun, how cages are tough even for us. I don't really get that line. Was that just saying we're strong, but even though we're strong, being in jail is still hard on us? Was that the line? Is that the interpretation I'm supposed to get there?
She's very clearly referring to being in prison.
Right. So that's like, no matter how tough I am, prison's still tough.
Well, we're not meant like a tiger, which is a wild animal, top of the food chain, same as humans. We're not meant to be locked behind bars.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. And I don't know how Sun's going to go because she's like kicking walls and people are telling her not to. And they're like, you're going to keep staying in the solitary confinement. And then another one of her friends, the most elderly of her group, is like, they're going to keep you in here forever, as in this prison. Like, you're never getting out if you keep being a jerk. So stop. So we'll see if she ever escapes her cage. But many people, even Wolfgang's like, I'll give you fresh air if you want. So it's not like she's really trapped. I always feel like if this is the way to be in prison, I'd be fine with that because she's a great fighter. Sure, a lot of people are after her, but she's a great fighter. She can escape anytime she wants in her head, have an orgy or a dance party or both at the same time. She's fine. She's kind of living a good life in there, but not because, yeah, she's like the tiger in the cage. So that was sad, as was the mother. I don't remember if this was in the last episode or this, but she's saying, secrets are what keep us together. You're still optimistic, Wolfgang. I know she said he was still a babe, but our sweet summer child is all grown up.
It kind of dawned on me in this episode that while everyone else has to like explain themselves all the time to other people, especially like Kala and, you know, Nomi doesn't usually because Aminita just kind of covers for her, but everybody else is kind of like, when they're talking to another Sense8, they kind of have to play it off. Sun doesn't have to do that if she's in solitary. Yes. She can just do whatever, you know, like she's kind of just on call, and in turn they each kind of take her out, like Wolfgang, you know, offering to give her some fresh air or whatever. Like, I think it's kind of lovely. This like Sun is just basically has nothing to do. So if she can show up to help, she's there. But here, you know, we'll also get you out to do a little dancing or, you know, whatever. Just kind of dawned on me, kind of sitting there waiting like, what can I do now? Who needs my help?
Right. Who needs my help? She's there for it all of it, as they all are. So I hope they enjoy that. Yeah. So what I find interesting here too is that Sun is just kind of hanging out now with her friends. She's painting. That's all cool. She didn't really see much fallout from what she should have, because they set it up as, you're going to try and kill me in a prison. And the guy says back, well, you're unstable, so no one's going to believe that you were doing it in self-defense. We never saw that fallout. We never saw that reaction from anybody. She was just like, yeah, I put them in the hospital. But that was it. And now she's like out having fun. And it seems like a very quick switch to me that she's able to just have good friends and not have guards and other people like being angry at her or whatever they should have reacted like. It seemed weird to me. It seemed weird that she got out of solitary even after that whole thing.
My only guess as to how she doesn't end up back in solitary after all that is that because the camera was off and there was no proof, she gets away with it. Like, because the cameras are supposed to be on 24/7, and so they can't use it to prove that she did that and that, you know, they didn't beat each other up or whatever. Like, because there's no proof and the camera was supposed to be on, that she kind of gets away with it and they can't hold her because of it.
Right.
Yeah, and they can't back each other up because they're unconscious or dead.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I took from it. It seemed kind of weird, but I was like, yeah, it's got to be the camera thing. Since Nomi mentioned it and like made a point to mention it, I figured that was why.
Yeah, they said that all three of them went to the hospital. I found that questionable because she definitely cracked that guy's neck. Like, yeah, cracked him or snapped. I don't think he's just in a hospital.
He went to the hospital to be declared DOA.
Yeah. So wouldn't it be, I heard you put two men in a hospital and killed another?
Seems like
there's
morgue.
A big difference there.
Pretty much.
Hospital/morgue. They're not doing good. Maybe they shouldn't be, from June Key's command. Yeah, but it's cute. She's painting very funny teeth on somebody. I'm not sure why, if it was meant to be funny, but they were like exaggerated, like large front teeth. And I was like, what is this? Am I supposed to know what this person is? It was just funny. But I like her friends. I like them a lot. I think they're all really cute. They're talking about the food they want to eat when they're out. And I don't remember what kind of food they were saying, but her one friend with like kind of the more like square face says, yeah, I really like it when they like add extra sauce to that, and they all kind of laugh. It's so precious. I love them all so much. These are the best kind of cell block tango ladies. More of them, please. And last but not least, we have Kala for this week. She is touring her new place to her family. And during a family dinner, Menandra, who is Rajan's father, says that he's running for office. This really concerned everybody because he did just get stabbed for being somewhat of a political activist, even if for a negative cause here, as seen from our perspective. So yeah, that is a thing that Menandra is running for office and everybody smells danger coming up. I'm going to ask you then, Caitlin, do you see danger coming up again for Menandra? Or is that plotting bad because he was already just stabbed?
I mean, I think if he were not going to cause problems, he should have just killed him. So keeping him alive is a way to cause problems.
Yeah. Very true.
He sucks.
To put it lightly.
And even his own family thinks he sucks. No.
Like his wife, the face she made, I was like, yeah, she knows he sucks.
Like, so, yeah, he's great. We love him.
Whatever your father says, and she's like pissed.
Just let the woman pray.
Yeah, for real. Like she wanted to. In the hospital, she did. What I noticed here too is that Kala is still wearing the necklace and the earrings because she was wearing it out when she was at New Year's Eve or whatever celebration that was that day. And Sun's like, I love your necklace. So it seems like I thought that that was going to be like a formal wear thing. Maybe this family dinner is considered formal wear. It seemed to me like she was just kind of wearing it more casually than I'd expected. I don't know. I don't know when people wear giant fancy necklaces because I've never owned one. But it seemed just very strange to me that she's wearing all of these rocks just around. But as you do, Kala, you know what? You rock it with your big hair. I love it. She's the OG Becky with the good hair.
I mean, it was a gift that's meant to like represent her relationship with Rajan, then like she's showing that solidarity with her with the families by wearing it.
It's a sort of dowry, yeah. Well, that's it for this week. I know there wasn't too much action toward the end, as much as there was toward the beginning, but that's just how the episode presents itself because it goes very Will heavy, as it does. So now we're going to go into our favorite scenes and our favorite lines for this episode. And Mai, we're going to start with you today.
Mine is Kala's dad wanting to take selfies because he's the best.
Selfie.
Oh, he's so cute.
I know. I'm surprised they all fit in there. That's like the Ellen DeGeneres selfie. Kristen, what's your favorite scene?
I loved when Lito is trying to talk Hernando into going to the premiere, and like he gives him the Lito eyes. Like he just has this look that's like, you don't want to make me sad, do you? Like just it's so great. And I like the minute he looked at him and gave him the eyes, I was like, oh man, he could get away with anything.
Yeah, I like that they're all just like in their skimpies. It's cute. Yeah. How they just all do that always because I guess they're all fucking, so whatever.
They're not worried. Modesty is not a problem.
For real.
They just don't care.
Yeah, it's funny because it took me until the second watching of season two, I guess, to finally get to this point where I understood that they were still like fucking and going as a threesome couple. Like this is them going out, all knowing boyfriend, girlfriend, which I don't know why I didn't understand the first time, but now I get it and I'm really cool with it. Cause they're like painting toenails and shit. It's all really cute, but
the toenails.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate it in a unique way that I didn't before because it's like just so much more obvious now. But yeah, Caitlin, I know you like your threesomes, Mai. Caitlin, what's your favorite scene?
So mine was the final moments of the episode when the sensei's like freak whispers the hell out and like show up in his office and are like getting all the information and he is like, whoa, shit. Like it was awesome.
Oh yeah.
It was very cool. I like it. I like that their filing was action. I agree on that point too. Yeah. So mine was just the interviews between Kafias and Lito, especially that Kafias was able to talk to his reporter. Contrasted with Lito not wanting to ever talk to his again, I'm sure, after she was so rude to him on the red carpet. But I'm happy he showed her up. Good on you, Lito. By like killing her with kindness in a way. So that
question
was cool.
About your scene though, Mitch. At the end when they hug each other, what do the other people see?
I thought about that a lot when it was happening, and then it answered itself kind of. Because I think Lito is hugging Hernando. Or Daniela, I don't remember which. And then Kavius is hugging Gila, but they look like in their heads they're hugging Lito and or Kavius. I think that it was just like they body snatched each other, each other's friends in a way. It was weird.
Show is weird.
It's basically like a giant group hug, but there's only two people involved in each hug.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah, the physics of it all are very much questioned. The science, I'll give you that much. All right, then on to our favorite lines. What's yours, Mime?
The King of the North.
I understand this is a Song of Ice and Fire reference.
Yes, yes, it is. And I love it.
I'll trust you that it's a good reference.
It's a very good one.
And then Kristen, what's yours?
Mine is Will's line that closes out the episode when he says, "You think you're hunting us? We're coming for you." Boom. Nailed it.
Mic drop.
Down with whispers. Yeah. It's Will's coming for your ass. Better watch it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Beyonce would be proud. Caitlin?
Even though I said I couldn't understand it when I watched it, having looked at this line after from your scene, Mitch, the speech from Cassius and Leto, I say, "Who am I? I guess who I am is exactly the same as you are. Not better than, not less than, because there's no one who has been or will ever be exactly the same as either you or me."
It's so beautifully poetic. It almost rhymes. I love it. It's almost like a Dr. Seuss line almost in a way because of how it jumps around and they talk about double negatives, I think, in this episode. This almost feels like that, but it's cute. I like it though. And then my favorite line is toothpaste in mouth. That's important for the inflection here. "Baby, you said 100 times this is what you wanted, isn't it?" And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to squidge your cheeks. So damn cute. Oh my gosh. All right. If you want to get a hold of us after all of our discussion this week for episode 202 of Sense8, you're more than welcome to email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable, helmed by our lovely Brittany. And our Tumblr is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We love your 5-star reviews on iTunes. They help us become more, I don't know, they make our heads larger, we'll say, for this week. If you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will give you a sleazy nightclub on a whim. All right, everybody, we're going to go into our last section of our episode this week, into our listener feedback. I would love it if you would read our first iTunes review here, Kristen.
Yes, our first iTunes review is from Wicked Kayla Q12. Yeah. And she rated us 5 stars and says, "Such a great podcast. I love that they change up their shows and the people talking in the episodes. All the hosts are awesome. Go listen." Thanks. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Wicked Kayla Q.
Yeah, just that's awesome. And I'm glad you like us.
On to our tweets for this week. Mai, would you take the first?
From Megatron Sexton at @unique_Megan. "Those last few minutes of Who Am I were so exciting. To see Whisper scared that he'd been caught, well, I hope it wasn't a trick, was great. I hope this means we'll get more than just drugged up Will all the time now, as I liked his character in the first season."
No comment.
Yeah, that's a hashtag I hear.
Newbies, anything to comment on there? Do you think it's a trick?
Do I think it's a trick? No.
Is it a fake out?
You think it's real? You think Whispers was really caught then, as opposed to a trick?
Genuinely freaked. I don't think it's a trick.
Yeah. Because Will seemed genuinely freaked too, I'll put out there, just to put a wrench in your theories.
I don't know.
I'm not trying to sway you. I'm being your devil's advocate. All right. So, Caitlin, then on to our next tweet.
So, from Cassandra at Palliard. I was watching Happy Fucking New Year on Sunday night and was like, when is this thing ending? I got to go to work in the morning. Of course I watched it all. Of course you did.
Was it 2 hours plus or just straight 2 hours? It felt longer than 2 hours.
It was 2 hours plus. It was like 2:05 or something.
That 5 minutes.
Like forever.
Yeah, the last 5 minutes really felt like the last bit I didn't need.
It took about as long to watch as it did for those 4 months to pass.
I know. And Kristen, our next tweet.
Yes, the next one is from Kellyish at Kellyish, and she was replying to Danielle. I'm assuming Danielle specifically asked about which Cassius you would prefer. And she says, "I prefer Cassius version 1.0. He's a soft cinnamon roll versus the golden retriever puppy that is version 2.0. I'm sure he was more fun for the crew, but it's sad they had to recast. Also, I must disagree. That would be terrible plotting is one of my favorite lines."
Same.
I picked it.
That was like the best way to lampshade. I loved it so much.
Sorry about my opinion.
Oh, you was that you, Mai, that said you didn't like it?
Yeah.
Sorry, I've been referencing this whole episode. That's so funny. I think, yeah, that's that would be terrible. Plotting is almost the equivalent of Avatar The Last Airbenders. You know, it was really unclear. I love it all. And then Mai, our last tweet.
Our last tweet comes from Leah at LeahTA11. And she says, I finally got the first Korra comics from my library. 3 heart eyes emojis. They're fantastic. If you haven't already, seriously, # read the comics.
There's a lot of comics out there for everything we do, so read the comics at your own risk. You'll go, me and Mai were talking, you'll go down a spiral for Buffy. You'll never get out.
But I'm guessing the Korra ones are better than the Buffy ones.
They're just quicker. There aren't as many. Maybe, yeah, just, I don't know. We talked about the Buffy in our finale episode, I believe. We did a whole comics thing, like a series wrap-up. So if you're curious to listen to that, please do. But for now, maybe just read the comics for Korra, because I don't think we're going to talk about that. But who knows with the upcoming live-action adaptation. I know I'd be interested in doing a special for it, but we'll have to see if there's enough interest, I suppose, to tell if we want to get into the live-action Legend of or The Last Airbender stuff for Netflix. We'll see when it comes out. All right, so our final part of today's episode are our speculations from our newbies. We're going to jump into Kristen's contemplations and Caitlin's conjectures for Sense8 203, obligate mutualisms. I don't know why I struggled there.
So, yeah, that title, huh?
Like, what's...
I mean, I couldn't get Who Am I, really? Yeah. You know? I have to talk about obligate mutualisms.
What is that? I'm asking you.
Well, obligate means to force someone to do something, and mutualism is like dependency on, like,
right,
requirement for dependency. So being forced to be dependent on someone else.
I mean, that's...
Who's dependent on who?
I mean, is Whispers going to be dependent on someone to save his butt now that the Sense8s have gotten his number? I don't know. I think we're definitely going to see, I mean, we're obviously going to see the storyline continue with them kind of getting one over on Whispers. I don't know what his next move is going to be, but probably will be to reach out to someone who can help protect him from whatever's going to go down. Yeah, that's about all I get.
I don't remember, so you could be right. All right, so we're done for this week, but we will catch you next week for Sense8 Episode 203, Obligate Mutualisms. But as for now, I am Mitch.
I'm Mai.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caitlin.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.